Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Kyle Mabry is at the controls. In this hour, we'll have a health topic for you, something that we try to do a couple times a year at least, so you can ask questions. And we'll be talking about skin and skin care. And our guest is Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist from Christie Clinic, one of a group of, I guess, three people that we sort of rotate along through this responsibility of being our dermatologist here for the show. We're real pleased that he could be here. And we will open up the show here to your calls. Now, every time we have a doctor on the show, I say the same thing. I'm going to do it again and give my usual speech that we can't diagnose over the phone. Obviously, here we're talking about things where for the doctor really to give you a good answer, he would have to see you, but... So I don't want to tell people not to call, but at the same time, you want to say, well, you know, understand that there's limits to what we can do because we're talking over the phone here. But I'm sure that if you have some basic questions, he'll do his best to give you an answer. And, you know, we do these shows to just add to your knowledge and give you a place to at least start and ask questions.
It gives me an hour break from
work. And it lets him get out of the office. That's why he does it. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank
once
you
again for being
here.
It's summer, so I guess we should do our obligatory rundown on skin cancer. This is something like, you know, I don't know how long we've now been talking about it in the sense that people have been cautioned about the dangers of sun exposure and saying, you know, you're going to go out there, put on your sunscreen,
right,
and do that. Has that made a dent in incidence of skin cancer?
No.
No.
No, it's increasing, actually. No. It's really increasing in numbers. And it's not because there aren't some people who don't wear sunscreen and avoid the sun and do all the proper precautions, but there are a lot of people. And there are a lot of people who are out, and some are out there because of the obligatory workplace, and mm-hmm. some because they are recreational, and some because they go to tanning beds, and some because they are lucky enough to get older and have more cumulative sun exposure. And so we see more skin cancer.
Yeah. And I guess I should admit, and there are probably other people like this, so that, you know, that I wear sunscreen sometimes.
Sure.
when I think about it, but there are a lot of times in my daily being outside,
right,
I don't.
Right.
And, you know, sometimes I know I'm going to be outside doing yard work, and maybe if I really think about it, I'll put it on. But
right.
But I don't always.
Right. Well, you know, I'm unfortunately about the same way, although I spend time inside predominantly during the week. Weekends, it's hard for me to preach because I don't much like putting stuff on my skin. You know, I don't know what the deal is, but I get annoyed too. So I do try to avoid being out in the middle of the day. I think that, you know, that 11 to 2 stuff is more problematic, but that's a great time to play golf, and it's when the kids end up at the swimming pool and all that. Mm-hmm. So sunscreen matters. It really helps. Clothing helps. You know, you can buy clothes that actually have an SPF rating on them, and they're nice recreational sorts of clothes, so they're sporty enough and attractive enough. They don't look like, you know, you're wearing something that you need to be ashamed of. Mm. Hats really are important. Ball cap doesn't protect your ears, doesn't protect behind your ears. It does maybe the top 2/3 of your nose, maybe, and doesn't protect your temples. So baseball caps are kind of helpful if you're kind of one of those guys that wears it backwards. It does protect the back of your neck. But, you know, and then the sideways thing is the sunshine slants. But really a hat with a brim is better.
Yeah, okay. In looking for a sunscreen, what do you look for?
The number. You know, 15 is pretty darn good. You're not going to get a sunburn. 30 is better. All the numbers over 30 are kind of nonsensical because mm-hmm. you're up in the high 90s percentage of UV blockage at 30. So I don't know what to make of numbers like 70 and 55, but they keep doing that. But that's okay. So those numbers are fine. There's no reason not to. But really, once you get to 30, you're okay.
Yeah.
Reapplying once you've perspired, you've been in the water, it really makes a difference. Pick something you like. You know, spray on stuff for the people who are going to be out and doing active things. Alcohol base, there are a couple of brands. I don't recommend any brand, but there's Bullfrog and Kinesis, and you can pick these up at any of the stores. They've all got sunscreen. Some of the nicer creams for your face, perhaps. If you don't like oily, greasy things, Neutrogena makes one that's got a nice dry feel to it on your face. What else is to say? Oh, if you're putting it on children, and of course, you get a lot of sun exposure as children, and they're out, and you don't want them to get, you know, burns and run into lifetime risks because of parental negligence. But you don't want to get it in their eyes. And that's one reason that Australia, for example, mandates that if you're outdoors playing an organized sport or school sport, the rule is no hat, no play.
Oh, okay.
And so because they've got an bigger epidemic of skin cancer because they've got all those light-complected English, Scotch, Irish kind of people close to the equator, and they're very outdoors in their orientation. And so they're kind of tired, and they have another interesting policy actually that I like. They put gallons of generic sunscreen in dispensers for free at the public beaches. So you're not taking a $15 or I don't know what the price of these are because, you know, they come and go in my life. But, you know, an expensive bottle in your tote bag and, oh, it smells like coconut. Yeah, they've got this slip, slop, slap stuff. And you just walk up to the dispenser and you just cover yourself. And an hour or two later, you cover yourself. And it's sort of one of those public good things. And, you know, it doesn't have all the nice stuff.
Yeah. Well, has that in Australia, has that been good for them in terms of reducing incidence of cancer?
You know, the first question I've never been able to answer on the air. I don't follow Australian skin cancer demographics and statistics. So I don't know if they've cut it down, but, you know, because, again, they've got a lot of people outside all the time.
But they've really made it a matter of national policy, at least in terms of trying to promote awareness and really, really, really giving people that message.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And there are a lot of messages out there, you know, with seatbelts and every other sort of thing. So you kind of hate to beat on people all the time and push on all this anxiety. But the reality is there's a lot of skin cancer and it's fairly destructive sometimes.
Yeah. Okay. We have callers, a couple of them. We will start in and talk with someone in Champaign. Actually, they're both in Champaign. Well, we'll start with line number one. Right here. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Hey, I'm old enough to have grown up on a farm and remember many people, my dad, granddad, et cetera, who lived in the sun and had the classic farmer tan. And I don't remember an incidence of skin cancer in my family or anybody else. It seems to me that to be a little bit put up about it, skin cancer seems to have come about since they started talking about sunscreen. What am I missing? Were there cancers back in the 40s and 50s? Why don't I remember skin cancer back then? It seems so prevalent now.
You know, that's a really a nice question. First of all, yes, there was plenty of skin cancer back then, and the old textbooks that I've got a nice general text from 1934, and you can see some nice pictures of ranchers and farmers and fishermen and the sort of people who are outdoors all the time. And the treatments for skin cancer were pretty simple, not sophisticated, and people didn't go for early diagnosis. So it was pretty horrific, and I'm not going to tell the story on the air, but I've got some farm family stories about, you know, Uncle Ned who had to live in the front hallway the front parlor with the door shut because he had such horrifyingly bad skin cancers. So first of all, they did exist. Second of all, people did not live quite as long. Now, everybody had somebody in the family who lived to 80 and 90 and those sorts of outliers, but people didn't live quite so long. Another factor.
Well, I'm from a long-lived family.
Yeah,
a
yeah.
lot of my relatives were well into the 80s and some into the 90s, and I don't remember any. So anyway.
They might have been wearing hats is another issue. Because,
but they were all well tanned,
At
least on their arms and that sort of stuff. Maybe they wore hats and didn't, you know, have their head exposed.
Right.
Anyway.
Okay.
All right. So you're saying that actually there was a higher prevalence of cancer per 1,000 or something in those days before sunscreen than there is now.
I didn't really say that. One of the things you're hinting at, I'm going to say explicitly, is that people who are out all the time and develop a tan do develop some relative protection against sun exposure. So people who are in the office Monday through Friday and go out and get a sunburn on Saturday and Sunday, that might be playing into some of the increased skin cancer risk.
That's exactly my point. My point would have been more the people who get burned often. I wondered if they have more cancers than people who gradually get a tan.
Yes, yes.
Spending a lot of time in the sun.
Right.
I, for example, spend a lot of time outside. I tan nicely, and I don't remember having a sunburn for years.
Right. Well, and there's another little hint to this. This is one reason that, you know, we're not doing science here, which is too bad, but there are so many variables. It sounds like maybe you come from a family that tans well instead of burns. Now, if you were Northern European redhead sorts, you'd have some skin cancer in your farm family background. But if you are one of those people who does get a nice deep tan and you tan early and you don't burn, that does cut down your skin cancer. There is a Thomas Fitzpatrick skin pigmentation rating 1 through 6. And if you're a skin type 1 where you always burn and you never tan, well, you're much more prone to skin cancer than somebody who, you know, is even a 3 and gets a little bit pink and then tans as the season goes on.
I think that's about where I am. But anyway, thanks for your comments.
Thank you. And we'll continue. Next up is a caller, also Champagne. This is line 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I'm being attacked by fungus. Help.
Help's already here at the pharmacy. What sort of fungus is getting you?
Jock itch.
Yeah.
I've been using terbinafine, yes, hydrochloride cream 1%, which seems to be slowing it down but not really knocking it out. I noticed there were two different types of active ingredient jock itch formulas around, and I assume I should try the other if this one doesn't seem to work.
Well, terbinafine is pretty good, actually. It's one of the better ones. It actually is fungicidal. How long have you been putting it on now?
Oh, about a week.
Oh, yeah. Keep after it.
Okay.
Keep after it. It's going to take a little longer.
Okay.
Terbinafine is a little better. It's definitely better than the tolnaftate, and it would also beat out clotrimazole.
Okay. So what? Just be persistent then.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
And
it likes dark, warm, moist and chafing, so it's pretty happy.
Yeah, you got them all. Mm-hmm.
How about your toenails? Are they clear?
No.
They're not clear.
That was the other fungus I was talking about.
Gotcha.
I've been using some undecillic
right.
Acid.
That's tenactin.
It seems to be bleaching it. I don't know if it's killing it or not.
Yeah, it probably won't.
Mm-hmm.
Toenail fungus is really a tough one. So far, we're basically – the topicals have a lower than 5% cure rate, and we like doing them because we don't like putting people on pills for infected toenails.
I was going to say the cure for that is still really expensive and has lots of side effects.
Actually not.
Really?
The terbinafine pills that would also knock out any other cutaneous sites for toenail fungus is now on the $4 a script list at Walmart. Yes, sir. So it's funny how that's changed physicians' perceptions. It's like, oh, you don't want that, and, you know, it's going to hurt your liver. Now we say, yeah, we'll do the liver test. You spend your $4. We'll check the test again, and we'll get you clear. And you have to make sure it interferes with other medications. It's not entirely benign, but we waited. I remember talking to David about this exact medication, 15 years ago before it was released, and saying, oh, we can't wait for the terbinafine because it's much safer than the old grisiafulvin that had been around for a long time. So it used to be $1,000 to get your toenails clear with a 50-50 3-year cure rate.
Yeah.
Now when you're looking at 12 out of your pocket, that's the whole – well, don't forget the doctor's visits and the lab tests. But
a little more reasonable.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Our guest this morning in this hour of Focus 580 is Dr. Lester Farner. He's a dermatologist from Christie Clinic and is here to talk about skin and skin care. If you have questions, give us a call. He'll do his best to help you out. 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. Next is a caller in Urbana, line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Back to the skin cancer. I come from a community in southern Wisconsin that had a large number of Norwegian descendants and also a fair number of Scots. I happen not to have been one of those, but skin cancer certainly was there, and it certainly seemed to almost run in some families. The very fair-haired, light-skinned Norse were particularly susceptible.
That's you're exactly right.
I don't know that I can't remember burning as a child. I simply can.
Mm-hmm.
But that wasn't the case with the blondes. And it was a nasty disease in the 50s.
Yeah.
I don't think we should take it lightly.
Oh, absolutely not. No, it's... You know, and unfortunately, I have trouble making myself wear sunscreen, but I certainly have the zeal to tell my patients, because I don't think that it's fair for them to, you know, be under doctor's care and then come back 10 years later and say, oh, well, you never told me. Right. The message is out there.
I try to wear sunscreen, but I tend to forget.
Yeah.
But anyway, thanks for the warning.
Thank you. Well, now I'm just curious, if you go back to that point, say, I don't know, 30s and 40s, back before World War II, was the only thing you could do was resort to surgery and just try to cut that area out?
Well, yes. No, there were two things that were done. In fact, maybe a third. You could try radiation.
Also, they
superficial radiation
fact,
therapy,
radiation.
Absolutely. And in fact, when I moved to town here, there was, you know, in my office was a old superficial radiation device that had been used by a series of prior dermatologists to do external beam radiation on skin cancers, and it was relatively effective. It was painless. It, you know, five visits where you just sat still and no bleeding, no surgical stuff. It, you know, 20 years later, it ages the skin significantly by causing some further DNA damage. But external beam radiation is something that we still refer patients for sometimes. And, you know, there are people who are not good surgical candidates. And there are sometimes when you clear it surgically and you need a little additional margin of safety and you do some external beam radiation. Obviously, excisional surgery has been around a long time.
Yeah. Okay. Next is someone in Indiana, Princeton, Indiana, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I wanted to know, I'm over 70 and I've had thin skin for a long time. When I work outside, well, I get snagged or easily. Is there anything at my stage in life that I can do to toughen it up? Or because I've asked this question before and not really come up with anything.
Mm-hmm.
Or is I just have to be more careful?
Boy, I love to be an optimist, but I think being more careful, wearing gloves, wearing your sunscreen to prevent further damage is really going to be the way to go. Be helpful to make sure you have good nutritional status. You know, get enough vitamin C, and you know, and I do not mean anything more than taking a multiple vitamin. I don't think mega vitamin therapy is necessary, but you can just make sure you have good general health. But to try to rebuild the thickness and the tensile strength of your skin and the elasticity is devilish hard.
Okay. All right. Well, you were on, and I thought I would ask.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you.
We'll go
back over to someone in Bloomington, Illinois. Next, line number 1. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I have a question regarding. I've been having some on the knuckles of my fingers, especially in the winter, and if I use my hands a lot with, you know, wash a lot with soap and water and stuff. The tops of my knuckles start to get pink, and they kind of look a little shiny sometimes, or they dry out and they crack.
Yeah.
What is the problem? I mean, I've been to see doctors, and they periodically have given me, you know, cortisone kind of ointments, and I'm kind of wary about using them for a long time. Is there anything that I can do otherwise? What is that usually? And it's been there for several years, and it seems to be getting more and more as I get older. And I seem to have tiny little spots sometimes on those hands, too. They look like little tiny raised bumps, but they're not really raised. They're just a little different color.
Okay.
A shiny color, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. Sometimes David asks me to be on in the wintertime, and this is a winter question, not a summer question.
Well, I still have it, though.
Yes.
In the summer, actually, those areas look a lot lighter than my skin.
Yes.
And I am actually South Asian, so my skin is brown, not dark brown, but it's still brown.
Mm-hmm.
These areas are more pinkish.
Right. Well, probably the dermatitis persists in the summer, and I was being a little flip about this being a winter problem, but it's definitely worse in the winter. But when people are outside and they're gardening or they're doing all the other things, cleaning car parts with solvents, there are a variety of ways to take the oils, natural oils, out of your skin. So that's what's happening with your knuckles. It's, you know, that I used to tell people that the 20th century was hard on skin. I haven't quite yet figured out what's up in the 21st. The, you know, it's important, as much as we are now washing our hands to prevent bird flu, swine flu, MRSA, and all the other infections, where each time you do that, you take out some of the natural oils of your skin. And then guess what? Bacteria love living in that dry skin and where it cracks in those fissures. So that actually can increase your risk of getting a cutaneous infection. It's important to re-moisturize.
Yeah, I do that. So, but then you this is some kind of, you know, of dermatitis.
Yeah,
I'm hearing.
It's simple dryness and dermatitis, and you know, sometimes every time you wash your hands, you just don't have time to put some hand cream back on. But when you get dry, you should do it. And certainly, bedtime is a nice time to put a good heavy hand cream on,
yeah,
because you're not going to be washing for 8 hours. And as long as you work it in well enough that you don't get it all over the place, it's a good time to put on some extra hand cream.
What I'm hearing is that the drier it gets, the more the actual problem can actually get worse.
Yes, that's quite right.
So I could start getting, seeing larger spots and on more fingers.
That's
if I don't keep trying.
That's exactly right. Yeah, you really want to take the time to take care of that. It's not, you know, obviously it's not cancer, but it is a nuisance. And if you were a healthcare worker and you had this problem, then I'd say, well, you know, you need to slow down and take your time. The alcohol-based hand sanitizers actually don't take the oil out of your skin. Now, you can't put it on the cracked, fissured skin you described in the wintertime, because then it will hurt. But
yeah,
but those foams and gels, actually, they just move the natural oils from place to place.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a nice way to get your hands clean,
okay,
as opposed to lots and lots of soap and water.
Okay, and I did hear that the previous questioner was about thin skin.
Yes.
I didn't quite get the answer. I'm not quite 70. I'm in my 50s. Is there anything that I can do for thin skin?
You know,
because my skin is very very, you know, delicate. It breaks easily. I scar easily.
And this is just sort of as a slow onset aging process. It's not because you've been on prednisone for an underlying illness or those sorts of issues?
No.
Okay.
No.
Well, you know, sun protection helps, long sleeves, and good nutrition and good general health are basically what you can do, and moisturize like crazy.
A vitamin in a particular did you mention?
Oh, I said vitamin C.
Vitamin C, okay.
Yeah. Vitamin C is important for collagen formation, and collagen is sort of the girders of your skin.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks. But I guess just to underscore something that you said as far as vitamins were concerned, you were just saying make sure you get your RDA.
Exactly.
We're not talking about
right
mega doses of vitamin
That's
C.
Right.
It's just whatever, you know, what's the one a day kind of
exactly
amount.
Yeah, make sure you get all your nutrition. And I used to always assume that people ate pretty good, healthy, well-balanced diets, but I'm starting to get a little bit cynical in my old age.
Yeah. And one other thing, I was kind of surprised by something you said. I would have thought that these alcohol-based hand sanitizers that people use when they can't, you know, if you can't really get it soap and water and wash and you want to do that, you know, you got their stuff that's for that. I would think that they would be really hard on the skin because of the alcohol in them.
Right. But think about obviously we're going to have good intact skin, and we're going to put the alcohol-based gel and we're going to sort of slosh it around, and then the alcohol evaporates. And let's say you pick up the oil from the back of your hand and you transfer it from it. It just moves around. If you take the soap and you say, oh, we're going to kill the germs, but you're also taking out the...
So the soap actually grabs the oil
and flushes it
down the drain.
Yeah, you got it. That's exactly it. So you're sending your moisture. Then you got to take a commercial moisturizer and put it back on.
Okay.
But the alcohol just slides it from place A to place B, but place B is bringing it back to place A.
All right. Other questions are welcome. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our guest is Dr. Lester Farner. He's dermatologist from Christie Clinic in Champaign, and skin questions are welcome. We will go next to who? Champaign, line number two. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 15-year-old daughter who has had lovely skin until about a month ago, and suddenly acne has bloomed. What? I mean, she's washed her face with a, you know, over-the-counter cleanser. What else should she be doing? How do I get her started on a good routine?
Great. Okay. So, you know, when you say it bloomed, it's hard to get a sense of the severity.
Well, she would have maybe one or two pimples, kind of the red, I guess, sort of oil-filled ones, not blackheads or whiteheads.
Okay.
And suddenly they appeared half a dozen on her forehead and on her nose. And
right. She fusses, picks, scratches, digs?
No, not too badly.
Good.
She just is concerned
okay.
about them.
And she's got no other recent health changes of any sort?
No.
And this wasn't in response to a sudden suntan, sunburn sort of phenomenon?
No. Okay. She's got very fair skin, and we've been vigilant on that protection.
Great. Okay.
Now, this all happened about the time of finals, so there could be a correlation.
Sure. Sure. Right. Gosh, maybe there was some stress. First of all, it's always tough. I guess the first thing to do is to start with regular, normal skincare and those things that are available without a prescription.
Okay.
That's step one. So,
okay.
I used to think that kids took pretty good care of their skin, and then you'd find out they say, oh, yeah, I just pin my hair back and splash water on it. I don't want to dry my skin out. And
mm-hmm.
I say, oh, no, because now we talked about washing oil off your hands with soap and water,
mm-hmm.
but teenagers generally, the triggering factor in acne is that once you hit adolescence and your hormones start waking up, the testosterone androgen category of hormones trigger your oil glands to wake up and start making more oil.
Mm-hmm.
And then sometimes a little duct orifice gets plugged up. And that's the beginning. That's the initiation of acne stuff. So it's important to wash the external oil off your skin.
Okay.
And harsh stuff, not so good. Mild stuff, better.
Okay.
So I like all the foaming face washes.
Okay.
They're all available all over the place. And they don't even have to have a therapeutic agent in them.
Oh, okay.
If your skin is, you know, just everybody makes one, all the mainstream
sure.
brands. If you can tolerate it, your skin doesn't get dried out. Many of the face washes also will have salicylic acid in them.
Mm-hmm.
Just a wonderful, you know, 120-year-old medication, something like that. And that will... the salicylic acid opens up some of the pores too. And if she can tolerate that, that's another step better.
Okay.
Also, without a prescription, you can buy a variety of types of benzoyl peroxides.
Right.
And that's been around a long time. The word peroxide indicates indeed that it will bleach fabrics in the couch if the kid puts it on his or her skin and then watches
mm-hmm.
what, I don't know what they watch now. So you fill in what they're watching.
Okay.
And then you get this bleached out place on your couch or your rug. So you have to be a little bit aware of that.
Okay.
But the benzoyl peroxides have been around for a long time, and they open up the little plugged up things, and they also are an antibacterial, non-specific sort of antibacterial, so it doesn't select bacterial resistance, and it's a nice, it's a very nice place to start.
Okay.
It's available in one of those packaged programs, which is called Proactive.
Right.
You've seen that on television. You can
right.
buy unpackaged the exact same stuff.
Okay.
And there are competitors. And, excuse me. If you do that, if she does that and it works, that's great. If
okay.
it doesn't, well, then she can go see a physician.
Okay.
There are all sorts of other things.
All right.
Acne is one of the hard things. There's such a large algorithm and what's severe for some people and
mm-hmm.
hormone issues for both men and women. It's
mm-hmm.
it's a complicated condition, and it I'm glad you're attending to it.
Okay, we'll start with this. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Bye.
And in terms of medications, there is one pretty powerful thing that is only available by prescription.
Right.
It's been around for a while now, and I know
yes.
for some people it's nothing short of a miracle just what it can do.
Right.
Although it's also something you got to watch for side effects. Is it you're still right. doing a lot of Accutane?
Treating with Accutane, yes. Yeah, I don't think that there's a dermatologist who would like that medication to disappear. It really can bail people out of severe scarring, cystic acne. The trick, of course, is to use it in the right people. And the good news is that it's quite tightly regulated, quite frankly, and it requires a monthly doctor visit to go over all the side effects mm-hmm. and to go over all the ramifications. And the biggest problem that we've seen with it, of course, is that it causes birth defects if you were to get pregnant while on it. After taking it, it's safe. But then so you get a chance every month to go over this. You check a pregnancy test every month. So, yes, we use it. But it's just like you use everything else that's got a worse side effect profile. Use it carefully and with respect.
Mm-hmm. We have others, and next we'll talk with someone in Indiana, Highland, Indiana, on our toll-free line. This is line number 4. Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Good, thanks.
I was calling because a friend of mine has a condition by the name of prurigo nodularis. And I was wondering if you could say, tell me sort of like what it is or if there's been anything new. It seems as though she's had so many problems with getting information about it and anything that's new on the horizon as far as treating it. And I'll listen offline.
Okay.
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 Thank you. Yes.
Thank you.
Well, nothing particularly new on prurigo nodularis. It's one of those things that dermatologists will make the diagnosis and then say, ugh, because it tends to be chronic. And it's one of those conditions in which we say, well, step one, we don't know. All right. Something happens to the skin, and it could be some minor injury. Let's throw out a few theoreticals, and I'm sure these are all operative at times. Little infected hair follicle, a little scratch from a thorn, a little insect bite, something that causes a little inflammatory process. And then when we make the diagnosis prurigo nodularis, what we're saying is this relatively thick lump, and let's say we're looking at something that's 3 to 6, maybe even maximum 8 millimeters or so, typically on extremities, is dome-shaped and reddish-purple, and it's typically there not because of the antecedent skin injury, but because of the chronic rubbing, fussing, picking habit. So when people come to me and they say, well, nobody's been able to cure my prurigo nodularis, I say, well, you're the only one who can cure it. And we do all sorts of things to sort of keep people from manipulating. And once these things are there and established, well, that's even worse because there's A, the habit, and B, maybe even some thickening, I wouldn't say thickening, overactivity, say, of sensory nerves that say, oh, scratch me, rub me, please, please. So we inject them with cortisone. We give people topical steroid creams and gels. We put them in ultraviolet light boxes. But it's a pattern of behavior, and so those again are pretty darn hard to change. And I think that probably in this large and interesting country of ours, there's probably nobody who's doing a lot of or any research about how to work this one out.
Oh, all right. Again, questions welcome, 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Our guest is Dr. Lester Farmer. He is a dermatologist from Christie Clinic in Champaign, and we're talking about skin and skin care. Give us a call if you have a question. And we'll go next to someone in Champaign, and this is line 1. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
About 5 years ago, I had a mole on the back that was diagnosed with melanoma. Did the sentinel lymph node, and it had not spread. So I'm 5 years out without recurrence.
Excellent.
Started taking Parkinson's medication. And one of the cautions there is it may cause melanoma.
Oh, really?
Requip.
Requip. Okay. And I'm afraid I don't know about Requip. Can you tell me the category of medication is it? Is
it's
it,
an
it,
agonist.
Okay.
It's also given for people with restless leg syndrome.
Sure. Okay. All right, but it's not a weekly injection sort of
treatment. No, it's pills.
It's not a biological. Okay, but it's specifically melanoma and not anything else.
Right, it has that sentence in there. It says, may cause melanoma.
Okay. Well, I'll have, that's a brand new one for me, so okay. I'll have to get in. If you want to call my office and leave your name, I'll look into that, and I'll be happy to talk to you.
Okay.
But I'm afraid I can't offer any advice because David's done it once and now I'm again at a loss.
Oops. Second question.
Yes.
With the Parkinson's, the skin has gotten oilier.
Yes.
Treatment there.
Is it the skin everywhere or particularly your face and scalp?
Face.
Yeah, that's quite typical. That's and do you get scaly, crusty red stuff too or not? Not in the corners of your nose, flaky, dry eyebrows?
No.
No trouble around your ears? Okay, well, people with Parkinson's tend to have something that we call seborrheic dermatitis more frequently, and it often does indeed lead to overactive oil glands. So all we've got that we can do is preferably is to just have you wash and clean off a little bit more. There are some, over-the-counter wiping pads and things like that. And you need to wash with a mild soap and just do that more frequently.
Okay. So I guess the question behind that was what type of soap?
None of the harsh deodorant soaps would I advise. So, I mean, even something as mild as Dove might be nice.
Okay.
Cetaphil makes a nice bar soap. Although I will tell you, I've been switching people over to liquid pump soaps once you start looking at the bacterial colonization of the bar soaps.
Sure.
Yeah. So just use that. That's why I have all my acne patients using all the little pumps because, the stuff stays away from all the contamination and stuck in a dark corner in the sink.
Okay. Well, thank you, sir.
All right. Thanks. And just as a kind of a quick question, is there a sort of a standard list of medications that make people's skin become more sensitive to sun, so that is, if they're taking something, that then they'll be might be more susceptible
yes.
to sun damage?
Yes, and in fact, it's a common enough phenomenon that, the pharmacist has stickers that just say, caution, may increase sun sensitivity, and that, they put those on the oral contraceptives and the sulfa or antibiotics and the tetracycline category antibiotics and the hydrochlorothiazide, water diuretics and some of the medications that are used for oral control of diabetes.
Oh, okay.
So it's an extensive list.
And so, but that should be the kind of thing that, as part of your prescription, either it's going to be stuck on there, or when they give you that piece of paper that says,
right.
"This is what it is. This is what it's for.
Right.
These are common
right.
side effects. This is what we want you to do." That information should be automatically provided to the
yes.
patient.
Yeah, generally would be. And the good news is most of the ones that cause photosensitivity are not all that common to actually cause. Some of the ones I rattled off, mm-hmm. I write a lot of doxycycline prescriptions, and there are ways to minimize the effect of sun exposure, and some of it's time of day, and some of it's sunscreen, and some of it is just it's not everybody who has the problem.
Yeah. And that would be the kind of thing where you might have that during the time that you're taking the medication, but then when you stop,
it's gone.
It goes away.
Exactly.
Okay. Next, let's talk with someone in Champaign, line 2. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a question for you. My daughter, 4 times over the last year, has developed big blisters on her outer ears, mm-hmm. Kind of like a poison ivy blister in that it eventually ruptures this yellow kind of oozy stuff. And we've had it cultured by her pediatrician for, first they did impetigo, and then he thought maybe it was a herpes virus. And bacteria, and it's just come back negative every time, and he's kind of at a loss. He doesn't know what it is.
Go ahead. It's both ears or one?
It will come on one ear, and then the next time it's on the other ear.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it's just...
How old is she?
She's 11.
11. Okay. And does she take any medications at all?
No.
Okay.
And it's painful when it comes, and oftentimes the blisters get really big and make her whole ear kind of swell up with redness.
Wow.
I know. Isn't it weird?
Okay. So never grew the herpes viruses, never grew staph or strep on bacterial. And you would have told me, since it happened four times, if it were as a sun exposure phenomenon. So it really truly isn't a sunburn.
It's not. No. Uh-uh.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's go to common occult. How about a curling iron burn?
No, she doesn't.
Okay.
She doesn't use that.
Okay. There is something that leads to a blistering eruption called a fixed drug eruption. That's the only, it's another thing I'm thinking about. And it always occurs in the exact same place. And now when she gets these blisters, let's say on the left ear, is it always in the same spot?
Probably.
Okay.
Probably kind of on the upper, outer area.
Okay. And so it's kind of an odd kind of drug reaction, because you normally think, oh, I take penicillin and I get hives or I get a red rash. But there's some medications, and the non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like the Motrins and Advils of the world are one of them, sulfa medications or another, where you take this medication and you just get in one place. You get this little clone of cells that are sensitive to it, and you get this big old blistery eruption there. And you think, oh, no, I've got just the usual suspects that your pediatrician was trying to investigate. And then it fades. And then there's a refractory period where it just isn't going to happen again, because once it heals, those cells are, let's just say, fatigued. But sure enough, you run across that drug a little bit later, and it typically is an intermittent medication. It's the people who occasionally have a urinary tract infection, they get an antibiotic, they get achy and stiff. The phenylphthalein category of laxatives like X-Lax is another culprit. But she really ought to be seen sometime when she's got it acutely. But think about if it's some little over-the-counter medication possibly.
Or she really doesn't take anything like that, but could it be a food additive or something?
You know, unlikely to be a vitamin. The food additive question is great. They used to actually put phenylphthalein in some of the maraschino cherries to make the red redder, but I think that's out in this country these days. So
okay.
I don't know. There are some food additives that'll do that occasionally, but why it wouldn't happen on both at the same time, unless it had happened.
Oh right. Uh-huh.
See, so that my story doesn't hang together. So I don't have a great diagnosis. It's pretty intriguing though.
Yeah, strange.
And it's
okay.
Only on her ears. You would have told me if it had been also on her hand or her lip.
Well, that's
or
what I thought. Maybe she's getting spider bites at night or something, but why just on her ears,
yeah.
You know?
And why just on one side or the other?
At a time, yeah.
Yeah. She's still undiagnosed.
Okay. All right. Well, thank you.
Well, let's go on. We'll go next to Champagne Line 3. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I don't know if this is beyond the scope of the program, but could you talk about treatment for various skin cancers? My family, my immediate family, we've experienced three different ones, basal cell, malignant melanoma, and a rare one that nobody else would hear about. Anyway.
What's the rare one?
Dermatofibroma sarcoma protuberans.
Sure, DFSP.
Yes.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I'm just sort of curious because I keep hearing some things about new treatments for malignant melanoma. I hear some variations in things about the basal cell.
Sure.
I was curious as to whether there's new things on the horizon.
Well, let's go to melanoma first, because that indeed is potentially fatal. And the diagnosis on that, the cure there is to detect them early and to excise them. And if you catch them early enough, there's a very high cure rate, and the later you wait, the lower the cure rate, which is terrible. One of the patient earlier who had Parkinson's mentioned that he had a sentinel node biopsy. We used to occasionally take out a whole drainage array of lymph nodes, which has got some significant morbidity. That's one of those things where your leg would be forever swollen afterwards, or your arm. Now we just take a few selective nodes, and that's in the last few years in advance. Once if a melanoma is thicker, usually we use 4 millimeters as a break point. Then we use a medication called alpha interferon, which is an immune system augmenter, and people get that to diminish their risk of recurrence or, you know, distant spread. And there are lots of trials for vaccines and chemo agents and things like that, and some of which show some nice promise. But we've been saying that for years in the melanoma.
Have you heard about? I heard one treatment where they like shut off the blood supply to an extremity and
right.
injected things.
Yeah, that's a single limb perfusion, and if it's predominantly in one limb, you clamp it off and you do really high dose chemotherapy in that one limb where you put it in the arterial side and let it come out in the venous side, and that way you make sure it doesn't get to the remainder. I don't know where that's done, but you know, that's one of those places you go to a MD Anderson or Sloan Kettering.
What about with basal cell? Is there anything new in terms of topical versus surgical?
Well, you know, the fellow who lived in southern Wisconsin and said, ooh, they were pretty awful, some of those skin cancers. There's an old doctor named Mohs who invented Mohs micrographic surgery, and that's been around for a long time, but it is a very good surgical technique. There is a topical that we use. It's called Aldera cream. That's the brand name. It's imiquimod, of course. And it's another immune stimulant that is used topically and can actually treat some superficial basal and squamous cell carcinomas. In fact, I've used it in some sort of inoperable sorts of melanomas, and there are published reports and photos of it being relatively effective in some of those situations too. So that's nice to be able to have another thing.
Are there side effects from it?
From the Aldera cream?
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, you want it to be successful, so most of us wouldn't use it, in particular on a deep or nodular basal cell carcinoma, just presuming that we're not going to be able to get enough cream there to be effective. So we use it predominantly on the superficial ones, but it's a local irritation sort of problem. One of the first people I used it on was quite an elderly lady who I didn't think could, because of her neurologic status, I didn't think she could cooperate for surgery. We put it on her chin, and it actually necrosed her tumor, which was not so bad. But it healed in about a week. But it can be irritating. It can be drying. That's about it.
Okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you. We'll try to get at least one more caller. This is someone in Lafayette, line 4. Hello.
Hello.
Mm-hmm.
I hope you haven't answered this already. What do I do for a small patch of skin on the elbow that got scraped on concrete, and 2 weeks later it's still oozing?
Oh, elbows are tough because of all the mobility and all the additional frictional trauma. So it's tender. Is it potentially infected? That's always question number one. Is that doing okay from that standpoint?
I guess it is. I just keep changing a bandage every day with antibiotic under it.
Okay. Which antibiotic are you putting on there?
Well, what's called a triple.
Okay. You know, one of the things that I see more and more and more is that with all the abrasions and stuff, and of course we were worried about MRSA and other infections, that a huge number of people are allergic to these topical antibiotics, and sometimes that will prolong your healing course. So you get sort of a low-grade poison ivy-like allergic reaction to the neomycin and the neosporin. I also see it with bacitracin and polysporin. And, you know, so you might be better off just buying something that's got no antibiotic ointment in there and get something that's bland, like plain Vaseline lip therapy, or there is every retail sort of store that's got this sort of item would have something called Eucerin Healing Ointment. Eucerin's got a funny spelling.
It's sort of standard grease.
Yeah. Well, it depends on if you're on a farm and your standard grease is for the John Deere. No, but you know, it isn't the Petrolatum family.
Well,
yeah, but just to keep it...
Petrolatum.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but I'd leave out those other things because it might be you know, a little bit red and a little bit weepy, partly because of an allergic contact to dermatitis.
Okay. I'll do that. Thank you.
Great. All right. Very good. Well, we're just about the point we have to wrap up. Wear your sunscreen. If for people who are particularly concerned, maybe if they have oily skin issues around their face and
right.
they're concerned about putting something like
sure.
that in their face,
yeah.
Something particular to look for that would be less...
Sure. And many different brands will come as a gel as opposed to a lotion. Mm-hmm. And the gels are generally hydroalcoholic and they don't have that yucky feel. Any of the alcohol-based ones... those are okay because the alcohol quickly evaporates. And Neutrogena, I forget the name, but if you grab the tube on the Neutrogena one, it doesn't feel like a slick plastic tube. It sort of has a dry touch. Uh-huh. And that's a clever marketing thing to let you know that it's going to feel dry when you put it on instead of sort of goopy.
Okay. Anything that you have found has particularly worked well and been popular among guys?
Actually, yes, that. And then any of the sprays, because instead of spending time lotion and if you've got hairy arms or other places or a beard, you just spritz on the, you know, you get a pump spray alcohol based and you just do a quick wipe and it evaporates and you're good to go.
And you're ready to go. All right. Thanks very much.
Great. Thanks.
Our guest, Lester Parner, he's a dermatologist from Christie Clinic in Champaign.